you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live, by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, so that you may enjoy long life. Hear, O Israel, and be careful to obey, so that it may go well with you, and that you may increase greatly in a land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord, the God of your fathers, promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commands that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. When the Lord your God brings you into the land he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you a land with large, flourishing cities you did not build, houses filled with all kinds of things you did not provide, wells you did not dig, and vineyards and olive groves you did not plant, then, when you eat and are satisfied, be careful that you do not forget the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Fear the Lord your God, serve him only, and take your oaths in his name. Do not follow other gods, the gods of the peoples around you, for the Lord your God, who is among you, is a jealous God, and his anger will burn against you, and he will destroy you from the face of the land. Do not test the Lord your God, as you did at Massah. Be sure to keep the commands of the Lord your God and the stipulations and decrees he has given you. Do what is right and good in the Lord's sight, so that it may go well with you, and you may go in and take over the land, the good land, that the Lord promised on oath to your forefathers, thrusting out all enemies before you, as the Lord said. In the future, when your son asks, "What is the meaning of the stipulations, decrees, and laws the Lord our God has commanded you?" tell him, "We were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt, but the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Before our eyes, the Lord sent miraculous signs and wonders, great and terrible, upon Egypt and Pharaoh and his whole household. But he brought us out from there to bring us in and give us the land that he promised on oath to our forefathers. The Lord commanded us to obey all these decrees, to fear the Lord our God, so that we may always prosper, be kept alive, as is the case today. And if we are careful to obey all this law before the Lord our God, as he commanded us, that will be our righteousness." Lord, as we look at your word, may it sink deep into our hearts. May our hearts be like good soil, prepared and ready, that the seed that you plant today will grow and flourish and produce fruit in amazing ways. In Jesus' name, amen. Before, Jim used the word earwig, music earwigs, and I'm sure as we've been going through the shops and listening to the radio, there are Christmas carols that have, you just afterwards just find yourself singing them, that they're there, they're sort of running in the tape in the back of your head. I wonder how many of those Christmas carols have the theme of Jesus as being king. What Christmas carols can you think of that focus on or look at the idea of this baby that is born was king? What Christmas carols are out there?
Hark the Herald.
Hark the Herald, yep.
Joy to the World.
Joy to the World. What's the line in kingship there?
Let earth receive her king.
Let earth receive her king. Excellent. More? Oh, come all ye faithful. Yep.
Once in Royal David's City.
Excellent. I have to think, I've got some written down here. I have to sit down and think about these anymore.
We Three Kings,
yes. paying homage to a king. You've got to stretch that one a little. Born a king on Bethlehem's plain, yep. See him lying, yep. Mary's boy child. And the, another one I came up with was, O come Emmanuel, God with us. The theme of Jesus being king is running through, one of the threads that run through Christmas. If I was to ask you, where in the gospel does Jesus most deeply wrestle with being king? What would your answer be? Riding into Jerusalem on the donkey, and I heard another answer. Temptations. Both times, Jesus is wrestling with the idea of what does it mean to be king? And the temptations is you have another voice saying, if you are the Son of God. Now, that Son of God, if you look at Psalm chapter 7, is talking about the king being called Son of God. Today I have become your father, you have become my son. That's a coronation psalm. So for the listeners, the readers of the Gospels, the idea of if you are the Son of God, if you are the king, then. And then there's the three different parts of wrestling with it. What does it mean to be a top leader? We know that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. What does it mean if Jesus is king to not be corrupted by that? One of the best explorations, if you're into reading literature, is Dostoevsky. Has a fantastic chapter on the temptations and Jesus wrestling with being king. Great read. And as he's doing this, what does it mean to lead well, to wield power, but to do it well? Jesus consistently turned to Deuteronomy. The bit that we've just read was the heart of where Jesus turned to and wrestled with and tried to come to terms with. What is this asking? How do we do this well? And so today we're looking at the foundation that Jesus drew upon. And in there, Jesus cites the greatest commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the second bit that he adds is from Leviticus, it's paralleled, love your neighbor as yourself. There's two bits going together. Hear, O Israel, love the Lord your God. The way the message puts it is great. I like this. He says, attention, Israel, God, our God, God, the one and only. Love God, your God, with all your whole heart. Love him with all that's in you. Love him with all that you've got. Write these commands that I give you today on your hearts. Get them inside of you and let them inside your children. Talk about them whenever you are sitting at home or walking in the street. Talk about them from the time you get up in the morning to when you fall into bed at night. Tie them on your hands and foreheads as a reminder. Inscribe them on the doorposts of your homes and on your city gates. This was absolutely foundational for the people of Israel, God's people. It was their identity. Having something on your forehead, have it something written over your gates and doors, that says to the world, this is my idea. Something on your foreheads, not so much about you, though it is a reminder for you, it's everybody who looks at you, sees. That's who you are. We could look at many other identity markers, whether it be rugby teams, or whether it be the hats that a Muslim might wear, or whether it be jeans and jeans that sort of hang around your bum because you're a teenager, that says, this is who I am, my identity. So the identity for Jesus and the whole community was, hear, O Israel, God. God, the one and only. And the highest ideal is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. And I wondered if we could do a Kendall Road amplified version of this. We could have love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and wallet. Gosh. Yeah. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and Wi-Fi. What else might we put here? Time. With all our time. With all our work time. With all our leisure time. Work is part of the time that we're expressing love of God. It's not just here's our God time, going to church and other times, and here's work, but right through. And our loving God through our leisure time, through the time that we have to volunteer to help. What else? Time. With our whole house. The welcome that people have at the door. The sharing of meals with friends, the accommodation that we're able to offer. Anything else?
Knowledge, our knowledge
and our skills, yes. And our ignorance. That's sometimes just as useful. What we learn, what we study, our reading. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. With all your mind, with all your soul, with all your wallet, with all your Wi-Fi, with all your house, with all your time, with all your leisure, with all your knowledge, with all your ignorance. This is the greatest commandment, the highest ideal, that which we aim for to reach. And we're going to come back to this, but let's just move on through the text for a bit. Fear. Fear the Lord your God. Wow. I know in relating to people who don't like Christianity, often the sense of fear. Why fear? That's awful. This idea of a God keeping you over, watching what you're doing, keeping you under his thumb, being scared of him. Is that what this is about? Well, no, not really. Fear, have you ever thought that fear and laughter go very close? That comedy is often a way of dealing with fear. But also fear and laughter, of you have a child and you toss them in the air and you catch them. And they squeal with laughter. It's slightly scary, but you're also safe. A friend of mine used to balance his daughter on his hand like this. She was standing there, and she would be laughing as he's holding her, just balancing her. That laughter of risk and fear, but there's an exhilaration. Risk. Following God is risky. I know lots of people who do things like scuba diving, parachuting, sailing, surfing. The stuff that has risk in it. Why? Because it's the risk that really, that they're after. Well, following God is risky. It's great. Growing up in New Zealand, the sea, the ocean was right there. So surfing and sailing. And good sailors love the sea, but you never underestimate it. You always have an element of fear. Because if you don't, you completely miss just how catastrophically wrong things can go. C.S. Lewis puts it this way, Aslan is not a tame lion. Our God is not a tame God. There is massive areas of risk, and that joy of risk in following God. Canon Andrew White, the chap known as the Bishop of Baghdad, absolute nutter, great guy, was in Cheltenham speaking at Trinity. Anyone here go and hear him? No, it was not long ago. And of course, he's talking about following Jesus and being church in Baghdad, the whole sort of, and the Middle East. He said he invited some of the ISIS guys for dinner because he knows guys like, well, he knew Yasser Arafat before he died, and many of the others involved in Hezbollah and Hamas and other groups, and he's worked in peacemaking for a long periods of time. And he invited some of the ISIS guys for dinner, and they said, if we come, we will cut off your head. So he said, I didn't invite them again. But he also says, I do not greet, when people leave, I don't say, keep safe. I say, take risks. Take risks in God. There must be an element of fear in following God because it is risky. But of course, the last, and probably where your mind went when sort of thinking about fear, is in the face of something, someone that is huge, awesome, just beyond those times when you're standing on a mountain and you look and you see the sunrise and you see the clouds and the force of nature and you realize this is awesome, but it's nothing compared to the God that I know and the God that I follow. God is big. There's that bit in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy talking about space. Space is huge. You might think it's a long way to walk down to the corner store, but compared to that, space is fantastic. And the whole book goes, well, compared to space, God is immense. We stand before an awesome and holy and huge God. Of course, that sense of awe, that sense of reverence must be part of our relationship with Him. A little bit further, Deuteronomy talks about don't test God. Don't push your God to the wall as you did at Massa, at the testing place. This is one of those little bits that echo through the Bible. It comes up again and again, and it's quite easy for us not to see that. What? Don't test God like you did there. Well, what is the background story to this? Well, God has taken them away from slavery, from oppression. There's been the release from the captivity that they were in, and having crossed the Red Sea, now moving on, it's difficult. They're in the desert. There's not enough food. There's not enough water. And they start, the word is grumble or murmur. Now that sounds all very, not too bad, doesn't it? But you see in the Gospels, people murmur against Jesus. Same idea coming through here. What is going on? Well, it's this whole idea of things are going so seriously wrong, let's overthrow. I think if you look at Jeremy Corbyn trying to lead the Labour Party, whatever you think of Corbyn as a personality and as a leader, let's look at the party at the moment. And there's some serious grumbling going on there. There's the politics are there are just amazing. People trying to position themselves to maybe potentially take on if and when Corbyn falls? When will that, how do you position yourself to not look like a complete backstabbing politician, but also maybe have that whole idea of undermining the not going with. He isn't competent. He's brought us to where we should not be. God is not competent, is the idea. And yeah, there are times when life hurts. Through illness, through loss, through difficulties of others, through breakdown of relationship, life hurts. In the midst of that, it is okay to question and struggle. But we must try and hold on to, even in the midst of that, God is competent. He can do. But the thing here is that Deuteronomy actually knows that we won't live up to this ideal. That we will fall short. We will fail. We will get it wrong. We just don't get there. There's an interesting dynamic that goes on through the whole book of Deuteronomy. Here's the covenant, your identity, how you're supposed to do. Guess what, chaps? You ain't going to make it. It's set up, almost set up to fail. More than that, that's a bit harsh. It's acknowledging that failure will happen. There's an interesting series of verses towards the end of Deuteronomy. It says, when all these blessings and curses set before you come upon you and take them to heart wherever the Lord disperses you, you ain't going to make it. That ideal that we looked at before, love the Lord your God. And Jesus expanded that to love your neighbor as yourself. I've told this story that I'm about to tell before here, actually, in this service. So for all of you who know I repeat stories, you should be in South Africa by now. but there's an addition. This is about when we were in Bangladesh. And Chris and I first went for 3 years. And we were young. We didn't have children. We had energy. We had ideals. We had a vision. And we thought, we're going to work for 3 years, train people up, then come home and do some further training ourselves. That was pretty set. So we could throw ourselves into the work. It was a 3-year sprint rather than a multi-year marathon. And we did. And when we got there, the numbers of deliveries was roughly 300 per year. And year on year, the numbers of deliveries were going up. So not long after, several years later, sort of almost 300 a month. I was in charge of the tuberculosis work. And we had 900 TB patients a year coming through. Also on the medical side, Chris was on the obstetric side. Chris was the medical director. At one stage, I became the interim executive director. And so it went on. It was great. It was fantastic. We were surfing, to use that sea analogy. And one of the real joys that I had was getting to know a tuberculosis patient of mine called Prakash, Hindu chap, really, really nice guy. And he had, if you looked at his x-ray, he had almost no lung on this side and half a lung on that side. And by the time we were able to get through so that we were able to get on top of the disease. A lot of his lung tissue was destroyed, but he could function on half a lung, but he couldn't work. How do you work there? So he was given a loan to set up in a little tea shop, and he was able to get enough income to feed himself, his wife, and his two children. And it was brilliant to watch the turning around this guy that was almost dead to he wasn't coping, he was doing well. That was excellent. And it was one of those stories that I got to know him, because of course when he's there unwell, you see him monthly and go and visit him. And that was right near the beginning of our thing and of our time. Through the tuberculosis work, myself and others worked to train up the whole team so that it didn't need me. It could run with the team that was there. And as we were getting ready to leave, so this had been set up, which was great. And on the day prior to our leaving, I was wandering around. At this stage, we were tired. It had been 3 years. It had been a long, long 3 years. And we were tired. There's some fantastic stuff that happened, some difficult stuff that happened. And I went to basically put my head in the tuberculosis clinic to say goodbye. And there was Prakash. And he looked like he had just stepped out of a concentration camp. He was bone skinny. In standing up, his legs were shaking. What's happened, my friend? And he said, well, it's not me. It's my daughter. She's got a cough. She's got a fever. I know what it is this time. You guys can help heal her. I put my head in the clinic, and sure enough, she did. But she actually wasn't that unwell. She was going to be treated. Life would be good. But he looked awful. Prakash, my friend, what is it? At this point, he falls down and he grabs my feet. And he says, if you do not look after me, I will die. And I thought, you're not kidding. This is no exaggeration. This guy is at the end of his tether. What do you do? What do you do after 3 years? And I said, I'm sorry. I've got nothing left. And I walked away. Well, wouldn't you know it? God, in looking after Chris and I, we go back to Cumbria, which at that stage wasn't flooded. A beautiful church of people who never changed. It was great for missionaries coming back. You picked up really. It was this wonderful, healing little community in time. And I went to one of the first Bible studies, and there was this really nice curate leading this Bible study, and it was on guess. The Good Samaritan. And there was the priest that had crossed the road. And the Levite that had crossed the road. For someone they didn't even know. And there was I. And I knew him. And all I'd been able to do was say, I'm sorry. I've got nothing left. The beginning of the parable of the Good Samaritan is, what is the greatest command? That's how it starts. And the answer is, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. This poor curate, not long out of life, not long out of seminary, is faced with this blubbing missionary. what a mess. And he said, Some really wise words.
See, do you know what? While we're called to be the Good Samaritan, we won't make it. There is only one. Only one. And that's the point. We can't just... The lawyer that asked the question, how could he justify himself? You know what? We can't justify ourselves. None of us can. This ideal is there for us to try and work towards, become like, grow towards. But it's nothing like what we will can attain without an absolute miracle. Deuteronomy is a beautiful book, a small book written about it, which is called Grace in the End. The book's title is about the law revisited, but actually it's all about grace. It's not about this is what you must be. It's more about this is what you can be. And under God, what you will be. But there's something more to come. And that something more is Jesus. What I seldom, when I tell that story, I seldom tell the end. Because the end, in some respects, I don't think helps certain people. But I think I need to tell the end today. Christine and I had a year away, and we went back to Bangladesh, knowing we had to pace ourselves differently, knowing that the mistakes we had made, what we could improve on, how, and but more importantly, knowing we had to walk in God's strength, not our own. Knowing that we would mess it up. That there would be people who died because we made mistakes, and I can point to others. But in Christ, there is grace for us to be able to do that. And I was walking through the hospital, and I heard a voice. Doctor. And I turned around and it was Prakash. I was stunned. He hadn't died. Amazing. What had happened is the team that was looking after his daughter had, and it wasn't that difficult to see, had picked up that he had lost his little shop. He had lost his means of income. Why he was so skinny was because he wasn't eating. He was trying to feed the kids. And they had just swung into action and got an extra loan. They had reset him up in what he could do. They had realized what had gone wrong with the previous place and why it wasn't sustainable, and corrected that. Of course, they'd fed him. But now he was a guy, almost 2 years later, looking not healthy. He will never run 50 yards, but looking well. Because God is bigger than who I am. God can do more than we can ask or imagine. The grace that we need for when we fall, the grace that we need for when we fall short, is far bigger than we ourselves have. But it is there. It is in Jesus, the King. Emmanuel, God Himself
with us. This time that Deuteronomy points to, when something bigger, something more of grace is coming, is fulfilled in Jesus. Emmanuel, God with us. I was helping a vicar friend of mine with communion, and one of the elderly chaps from the church came forward, and I noticed he sort of went like this to receive the bread. And afterwards, the vicar pointed out to me, "Did you see so-and-so?" "Yeah," he said. "Do you see what he did?" I said, "Yes." "He always does that." He is making his life into a cradle, into the manger, that Jesus may be born in him afresh, anew. Isn't that a beautiful thought? That we are that place that Jesus is born. Each at Christmas, we remember Jesus coming. So he comes to us. And that grace of resurrection and of strength and of healing and of new life and of joy and of song is ours because Jesus the King is born. Deuteronomy points to Jesus. And there is grace in the end. May he be born in us this season. Amen.